We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Bruce Pascoe and Alec White. And we are part of the Arizona Daily Star sports team. And as we were telling the good folks here at Frog and Firkin, throughout the U of A football season, we always come and record a new episode of the Wildcast podcast, talking all things football. But now it's basketball season, guys, and I'm sure a lot of people, they don't want to hear about the U of A football team. They want to hear what's going on with this Arizona basketball team. Special thanks to Frog and Firkin for always hosting us, and I'm excited to talk some basketball here. But let's look back at the game last night, Bruce and Alec. Arizona, they beat Omaha by 50 points, 99-49, and it was a get-right game for Arizona. It was a bounce-back win for the Arizona Wildcats, considering they just lost to Baylor on the road as their first loss of the season. And I'm not sure what you could take away out of this game, because you could tell just from warm-ups that Omaha, they just couldn't match up with Arizona. So I got to ask you guys, what did you take away from Arizona's win over Omaha?
I think you can just tell that the freshmen are way more comfortable playing at home. You know, Josh Green had a big game last night. He was 6-10 from the field, 15 points. Nico Mannion had a double-double. Zeke Nagy was getting the ball more down low in the post. He didn't have as big a scoring game as he had, you know, the first couple games, home games of the year, but he was a big factor on offense. You know, Dylan Smith, he's not a freshman, but, you know, he found his stroke from long range again that he had in Anaheim.
So Anaheim Dylan.
It was just one of those deals where Omaha is clearly the, you know, lower matchup, you know, good matchup for Arizona to get right, as you said, and, you know, they were able to create mismatches on the boards, and, you know, that was the story.
Well, I think it's what you said, Justin. It was, what, a get-better game, which incorporates what Alex is saying, but this was a game. This is why when people wonder why you don't have Gonzaga and Illinois or whatever on your non-conference schedule all the time, you have to have a game like this in between. It was really smart of them to schedule this between Baylor and Gonzaga, because they knew win or lose going to Baylor was going to be tough on them, and they needed to come back and get their confidence, and otherwise going into Gonzaga could have been really problematic, and at least now they have a mindset that they can maybe make a shot at it on Saturday.
Also, too, you know, out-of-town scores from last night, Illinois had a big win over Michigan. Baylor looks like a pretty good team. So far, does Arizona's non-conference schedule help them out with all these marquee wins?
I think so. I mean, as you said, Illinois beat Michigan. But if they want to make it look really good, they got to win on Saturday. That's really the only, you know, Illinois will be a quality win, you know, moving forward. But I don't know if you can say that, you know, come February, March, about, you know, Wake Forest, Penn, Pepperdine. Yeah. And, you know, if they lose to Gonzaga, you really leave off a marquee win.
Yeah, because Baylor, that's a loss. Yeah. Gonzaga, that's a loss. That's two top 25 teams that Arizona should have beaten, and they lost. So, or that's assuming if they lose to Gonzaga, but that remains to be seen.
Well, the reality is this is not a strong non-conference schedule. These two games, notwithstanding, they're good games, but overall the schedule's pretty weak for Arizona. But they're going to be fine because the Pac-12 is so strong this year, and it'll balance out. I mean, right now I think the strength of schedule is like 230, which is pretty bad. But by the end of the Pac-12 season, it'll probably be more like 70 or 80. So they'll be fine. But, you know, it just so happened, you know, they were in a weak multi-team event in Anaheim. And, you know, those New Mexico State wasn't even as good as expected. And, you know, they just, you know, they had to play NAU. Things like that happened. And so it kind of brought it down. But for a team like this that was rebuilding a lot, or at least supposed to be rebuilding, it was probably intentional or made sense at the time, but it is a little bit on the weak side.
So now that Arizona is 10-1 on the season, they got a big game against Gonzaga, in which we'll get into the details later on. We'll preview the Gonzaga Bulldogs and what these guys are about. But through the first 11 games of the season, what has jumped out to you about this team? Can you already get a feel of what this team's identity is, or does that remain to be seen?
I think we're still waiting to see what the true identity is. I know Sean Miller wants his team to play fast, but then we've seen games where they come out and they play too fast, and they're taking bad shots too early in the shot clock, and it disrupts the rhythm of the offense. And then, you know, what that does is, you know, you take a shot too early and you don't get guys that are in the post to block, you know, box out and rebound, and all of a sudden Arizona's not shooting the ball well and they're not rebounding, and then, you know, your strategy of playing fast goes out the window. But then we had a game like last night, and, you know, what they did in the Wooden Legacy, where they can get out in transition. You know, Nico Mannion, when he's the engine of that team, when he's, you know, hitting shots, and he had 11 assists last night, you know, he was getting everybody involved. When he has games like that, it's pretty clear to see, you know, this team will go where Nico takes them offensively, just because he can, you know, he's the floor general out there.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a little conflicted identity right now, because I think their best thing, obviously, is offense, not only with Nico Mannion running the show and setting guys up as well as he does, but also when Zeke Nnaji's been able to ford through the defenses that have been thrown at him. He's been way better than people think. And so they've got kind of a you know, inside-outside. They can beat you in a number of different ways offensively. But as Alec alluded to, they're struggling a little bit with what Sean Miller's identity is, which is defense and being careful in your offense. And they have to temper it a little bit. You know, and we're kind of seeing where they're going to come out exactly on that spectrum. You know, that still remains to be seen.
Well, and that's a good point, because last night in the press conference, Sean Miller said the Achilles heel of this team is defensive rebounding. You know, you go back to that Baylor game, they were out-rebounded by the Bears. The game last night, although they did finish with 14 more rebounds than Omaha, you look at offensive rebounds, they still gave up 14 offensive boards to Omaha. And a team like that, and I don't want to, like, dog on them and, you know, and call them a cupcake team, but they're a far inferior team to Arizona. When you have the kind of size that Arizona has, when guys like Chase Jeter, Ira Lee, Zeke Nnaji, heck, even Christian Coloco, there's no excuse to be out-rebounded on the offensive glass by Omaha. And I think that's going to be a big issue. And guess what, guys? Gonzaga's a lot better than Omaha. Gonzaga's got a better, way, way better front court than Omaha. Yeah. And if they don't clean this up, I mean, it's going to be a long night for Arizona Saturday night.
Yeah, I think that's what he was alluding to, was the relative strength. Actually, when you look at it, Omaha missed 47 shots. So getting 14 offensive boards wasn't actually that bad. But they only had, like, one guy who was 6'11". They had a real strong guy there, 6'8", Mac Pyle. But for the most part, that's a team they should have been cleaning up on, absolutely.
Got to box
and,
out.
Yeah, and so he knows that. I mean, look at Gonzaga. I mean, they're 6'10", 6'10", 6'11", and all those guys can – they got skills, too. They're not just big guys taking up space in there. So, yeah.
Also, Nico Mannion had 11 assists last night. Very impressive performance by him. And he joined Russell Brown from 1978 and Mike Bibby from 1996 as the only U of A freshman to have multiple games of 11-plus assists. So somewhat of a historic start for Nico Mannion. And I don't want to jump the gun and say he's the best point guard Sean Miller's ever had, because I know T.J. McConnell is very near and dear to a lot of Arizona fans' hearts. But is it safe to say he's probably the overall the best point guard Sean Miller's brought to Arizona?
Talent-wise, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Josiah Turner was supposed to be like this, but he had a lot of issues off the court, and he never really became what he was supposed to be, and actually was kind of a disaster in a lot of ways, I think, for Arizona. But, you know, I mean, for the most part, I don't think anybody would compare. I mean, and even if you define it as bringing to Arizona as a recruit, I mean, TJ was a transfer, so, you know, it's kind of a little bit different category there. And certainly out of high school, you know, TJ wasn't even recruited at this level. I mean, we all knew the hit story. So yeah, as a freshman, I would say absolutely as a point guard.
I think the one thing that separates Mannion from TJ is his scoring ability, his ability to score in multiple ways. He's got a great floater. He can shoot from behind the arc. And I think the one thing that I'm still waiting for Nico to develop is forcing contact at the rim. We haven't seen that a whole lot where he just kind of gets in the paint and then he does the floater, which he's really good at, but he's not necessarily initiating contact to draw fouls. He's been a little timid in the paint, which I think that's the one element I'd like to see him develop a little bit more.
Well, yeah, and you know, you look at the most recent games from the free throw line. He didn't attempt a single free throw last night against Omaha, which he should have shot 8 free throws like he did against Baylor. You know, he was 3 of 5 against Wake.
The ones against Baylor, though, I think 6 of them came on a 3-2. He was fouled on 2 3-point attempts.
Yeah.
So even then, when he's taking free throws, it's because he's getting fouled behind the 3-point line or on a jump shot.
Yeah. But now that Arizona is moving ahead to Gonzaga, and we've already talked about the state of this team, who's been the most impressive player, or I should say maybe the most surprising player that has emerged over the first 11 games? Alec, we'll start with you.
To me, it's a tie between Dylan Smith and Jamal Baker, just strictly because Devonair Dutrieve, you know, was dismissed, or, you know, he was suspended early in the year. You know, it forced Baker and, you know, Dylan Smith to play more, and then, you know, Dutrieve came back, and then he was, you know, removed from the team. And so not a lot of people coming into this season expected, you know, Dylan Smith and Jamal Baker to be legitimate go-to scorers for this team, because Dutrieve was going to be there. You know, a lot of people thought Josh Green was going to be, you know, the second guy after Nico. And, you know, I've been really impressed with the way they've both have been able to shoot the ball. And, you know, Dylan Smith is a good perimeter defender. And Baker, he's, you know, 1 year older, you know, than the freshman. He's a sophomore transfer. But, you know, he plays, you know, with experience. You know, he came from Kentucky. He's got a good grasp on, you know, the feel for the game. And, you know, two of those guys in the backcourt, I think they've been pretty good.
Yeah.
I think you still got to go with Zeke Nagy. I just think he was supposed to be good, but not this good. And you know, his shooting is down to 70.7% right now.
Oh, it's down.
But I mean, that's a big part of the reflection of the way defenses are playing him. And I think you have to discount a little bit about what he's been going through the last few games, because he's adjusting to those defenses. And yes, he's getting frustrated. He's probably doing too many offensive fouls. He's turning the ball over a little bit. But overall, big picture, I think he's been way better than expected. But as Alec alluded to, I think probably also, you know, Jamal Baker's been a little bit of a surprise. A, because he wasn't even supposed to play in the first place this season, and B, because he's been pretty much better and more efficient at everything, playing both spots, and it's a huge blessing for them, and frankly, one reason why losing Devonair Dutrieve isn't really hurting them at this point, which is hard to believe, because Dutrieve was arguably as good as anybody in the preseason, and now you're sitting here in early December saying, it doesn't matter. But it's kind of true.
You know, I've been very impressed, and that was a good selection by you, Alec, by picking Dylan Smith. I'm going to be honest with you, Bruce. I didn't think Dylan Smith was going to start this year. I really didn't. I know it was a toss-up because he started a few games last year.
He's a senior. I thought he would get the nod.
But going into this year,
defense.
I automatically assumed it was going to be Devonair Dutrieve starting at the 2, and then Josh Green slotted over at the small forward spot. And then, obviously, things kind of fell through for Devonair Dutrieve. He's now at Boise State. We haven't talked about that since it happened.
Joining Emmanuel Acott.
So there's 2 former Arizona Wildcats now playing for Boise State right now. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, Acott has to sit out the whole year. He has to sit out spring, and now he has to sit out a whole other year. And Dutrieve is going to have to sit out a whole other year and a spring. I mean, it's a lot of, unless he gets an appeal, but Acott's failed, so his appeal's failed.
But the point I was trying to make here is, I know, you know, Dylan Smith, probably the best rebounding guard that Arizona has right now, but in terms of scoring, I thought he's been a real pleasant surprise, especially in the Wooden Legacy, and then last night against Omaha. You know, what did he finish with last night against Omaha?
14 points, and he had like 4 3-pointers.
Yeah, he was
all the first half.
He was 4 of 6 from 3-point range. But, you know, he's been a nice addition to Arizona, because last year it was anytime Dylan Smith had the ball in his hands, you were kind of like, oh man, what is he going to do? Is this going to result in a turnover? Is this going to result in a shot, you know, off the back of the iron? But this year he's been that veteran leader for Arizona, playing defense and being smart with the ball. And that's another thing that I think is key, is this team, at first, you know, they really started to turn over the ball a lot, but I think they're starting to take more care of it, and I think that's going to be huge for them in non-conference, but I think, or going into conference play. But I think with this team, to me, Zeke Nagy is a good pick because he was kind of like the third fiddle. The two headliners for this class, it was Nico Mannion and Josh Green, but you knew Zeke Nagy was going to find himself in the starting lineup. He was going to be a key part to Arizona. I was unsure about Dylan Smith because last year it was like, okay, is this his ceiling? Well, now he's gotten a lot better.
True, but there were some people thought I really would start over Zeke. I don't think people realized how good Zeke was and would be right away until they started seeing what he could do in the fall practices. But, you know, but and Dylan, I just thought because he plays defense and because he's a senior, he was going to start. You know, Dutrieve might have made that very interesting had he continued to stick around and play the way he was. But you know, Smith, I mean, he gets a lot of people kind of bag on him because he gets cold sometimes. He's a streaky shooter, but he's consistently good defensively. And, you know, he's a guy, he's stuck around through a lot of hard times. And, you know, he's been a program guy. You know, around here you don't see that anymore. I think there's a lot of reasons to pull for him.
Now, some updates with this Arizona team. Stone Gettings. I didn't realize how bad his fracture was until you posted the photo on Twitter last night. He looked like the Terminator. He's got a shiner right underneath here. He's got a black eye. And then his entire eye is just completely red. Yeah. He looks just like the Terminator. Yeah. Face fracture from the Wooded Legacy. He's going to be out, I'm assuming, against Gonzaga, although Sean Miller didn't rule it out. And if he does come back against Gonzaga, he's going to be wearing a mask. I'm just going to go ahead and say here, complete speculation, this is not sourced by any means, but I think he's going to be out against Gonzaga. I mean, you saw his eye.
Yeah.
I think he's done for the rest of this week, and I wouldn't be surprised if they hold him out until Pac-12 play.
That's what I think. I mean, Miller said last night it was more like he'd come back for the St. John's game on the 21st, which is possible, but you know, in this day and age with concussions, you just don't mess around. You err on the side of safety. And Miller said last night he's still having symptoms. So that was Wednesday. If he's clear, if he has none today as we're talking, okay, maybe he plays Saturday. But, you know, what's the chance of that? Probably not very good. So, you know, I don't – and certainly, yeah, I mean, he'd have to wear the mask. He, you know, it looks like he – you know, I wonder if his vision's even impaired a little bit, as bad as that eye looks. Maybe it's not, but – it's, you know, it's pretty significant. And so, yeah, I don't think he should be counted on anytime soon.
I mean, I don't have any arguments to what you guys have said. I would assume that he doesn't play. And I think the one reason, you know, if Sean Miller can feel good about it, I mean, concussions, you don't want to really mess with that, especially, you know, Miller was saying that they've had to, you know, shelter him kind of away from the bright lights. You know, you don't want to throw a guy out there if he's not ready, and especially when you've got a guy like Christian Coloco on the bench who, you know, could fill that role. Even though Coloco's not as good a shooter as Stone Gettings is, he's a much better rebounder and shot blocker.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if Stone's out, what Coloco can do against Gonzaga, because he did not have a rebound at Baylor, and he did block a shot. I think he was good, but on the boards though, and Baylor is very physical and big, and Gonzaga is probably even bigger, maybe not necessarily more physical, but as physical and taller, and so
yeah.
He's not going to have an edge. Like last night, Coloco's 4 inches taller than almost everybody out there. So it'll be interesting to see. Maybe he rises up, and you know, certainly he's got confidence going for him, and they can get something out of him there. That would be a big bonus for him.
We had 3 blocks against Omaha, 10 rebounds, 5 points in just 12 minutes. That was hands down his best game as an Arizona Wildcat. But like you said, it's much different when you're playing against Gonzaga than Omaha. And with Stone Gettings out, I mean, Christian Coloco is going to play a very important role. I'm not sure how many minutes he's going to get. Do you assume that he's probably going to have the same, about 12 minutes, and maybe a guy like Ira Lee, they'll bump his minutes? They'll play Chase Jeter more? They'll play Zeke Nagy more?
Yeah, I mean, Ira played, 20 last night.
Because
I see him going 20-23, and Jeter maybe 28 if they don't get in foul trouble and they're handling it physically, yeah.
Because is Christian Coloco ready for Gonzaga?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's going to be a huge test for him because I think Baylor, that was tough in some ways. He did the job in some ways, but it's a whole different level than Omaha. I mean, you saw last night there was one guy took a shot, pretty much Klokko just grabbed it out of his hand as he took a shot. It wasn't even like he...
It's like out of air.
We thought he blocked it, but they actually ruled it a steal because literally it was. He just like said, here, I'll take it. You know, and so, but he's
like
not going to be able
NBA
to do that.
Yeah.
But he won't be able to do that against Gonzaga, I don't think.
We'll preview that game coming up in just a few minutes here, guys. But in our Rail story, Alec White, you know what one note that I included in last night's story?
What was it?
The big number, 5. Number of days until DeAndre Ayton comes back from his suspension.
That's big.
He's currently serving a 25-game suspension with the Phoenix Suns right now. And he's expected to come back December 17th, which is a game against the Los Angeles Clippers. But that's in L.A. A few days later, that's when he comes back to Phoenix. But I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen an NBA player test positive for a diuretic. Bruce, have you seen a professional athlete get suspended because they tested positive for a diuretic? Normally, it's like whatever drug they're taking, whether it's performance enhancing, whether it's smoking weed, whether it's whatever. Usually it comes up on the test, but instead it was water pills.
Yeah, I don't know if when the NBA added that particular diuretic into their banned substances, because maybe it's relatively new added. I mean, they've all these things have been a little more strict across the board, so they're testing for things that can possibly block other things or whatever. Maybe that's a new addition. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to keep track because it seems like there's been a number of issues across all different sports, so I wouldn't know.
And yeah, the Suns are going to need him too because they got out to a really hot start, and now I think they're under 500 now.
Yeah, they're definitely under 500.
Yeah, 11-13. They lost last night to the Grizzlies. So Ayton will be, his presence will be needed for that team. And I'm really excited to see what he does in his sophomore year. I know, we talk about a sophomore slump every now and then, but Luka Doncic is having that one heck of a year over there for the Mavericks, and so Ayton just kind of has gotten, with the suspension, lost in the shuffle, especially with Trae Young doing well. So Ayton, it's do or die.
Nobody's really talking about
him. Yeah,
and that's just it. And I feel bad for him. And we were talking about this in the newsroom last week. Everybody's talking about Luka Doncic. And, okay, if you were to redraft that class, do you pick Luka over DeAndre?
Well,
it's kind of hard to say because Luka's averaging a triple-double right now.
That was the debate before the draft, too, and it's still happening. And, it wouldn't have been wrong for the Suns to pick Doncic. I think they thought about it. But on the other hand, Ayton's one of those guys, as Sean Miller likes to say, there's not many guys roaming the earth like him. So I think the Suns felt they just had to take this guy. Plus, he was in their backyard anyway,
yeah.
And see what happens. And but I think there was a lot of people before the draft who said Luka Doncic is going to be the best player in this draft. It's not a surprise what's happening.
I think Suns fans really pressured the front office to pick them because I remember while you were in New York, Bruce, I was up at headquarters at Talking Stick Resort Arena. Mm-hmm. They had a big old draft watch party, and they said, "Who wants DeAndre Ayton?" And the whole crowd, the roof almost came apart. And then they said Luka Doncic, and they booed him. It was the New York Jets fans watching Roger Goodell coming out.
That's
the
just
stage.
People not paying. I mean, probably not really looking at it attention wise. Because if you really looked at him or watched video on him or saw people who had scouted him said, you would have known he was legit. And but it also shows you the power of playing college basketball. I mean, we see all these guys going to Australia and doing all this stuff and that. But if you play college basketball, you market yourself. It not only helps you with fans, but also getting shoe deals and all that kind of stuff. So, that's why people knew about him. Plus, obviously because he was playing for U of A, probably made a big difference as well.
Think about the ripple effect if the Phoenix Suns do, in fact, take Luka over DeAndre Ayton. Igor Kokoshkov would still probably be the head coach there. And where would Monty Williams be? That's a big question.
Yeah.
Would he be coaching the Knicks? Would he be coaching the Lakers? Yeah. I don't know. It's just something I always think about. All right. Well, that's our NBA updates. And also big shout-out to Solomon Hill for coming down to Phoenix last night and getting the win over the Phoenix Suns. Still no word on Andre Iguodala. If you guys were to put money on which team he would go to, who is
Lakers?
It?
Yeah, that's the last I heard. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Nothing going on with Iggy. It's almost Christmas.
He's enjoying himself.
I mean, he doesn't have to play for anybody. He could just retire and be happy. I mean, he's certainly got a guy. He's not bored. He's got lots of things going on in his life, and I'm sure that's probably part of it for him. Mm-hmm. See, he can sit it out, and if it doesn't happen right away, that's probably fine with him. I mean, he took a trip here and spent, 3 days here, hung out with the women's team and the men's team, went to a game. I mean,
yeah.
You know, life is good.
All right, guys, let's talk about this big game Saturday night, 8 o'clock tip-off at McHale Center. Number 6 Gonzaga versus number 15 Arizona. What are your thoughts on this game? Are you comfortable with picking the Arizona Wildcats, or how do you think this game is going to shape out?
I'm really excited. It's the first ranked matchup at McHale since 2017, when Arizona State, when they were number 3, when they came to town. And so it's just one of those games where, you know, it's going to be sold out, it's going to be loud, it's going to be a fun atmosphere. But the one thing that worries me is Gonzaga's not going to be scared of that, of, you know, coming into McHale. I know Gonzaga's never won in McHale before, but, you know, Arizona's still very young, and Gonzaga's a much more experienced team, and they do a lot of things that can create problems for Arizona, specifically, you know, on the front court end. They've got Killian Tilly. I don't know who's, you know, probably Zeke Nagy's going to guard Tilly, but, you know, he's been, you know, far and away one of the most impressive players on the Bulldogs this year. In the 6 games he's played, he's, you know, scored double digits in almost all of them. So I think it's going to be fun, but it's going to be a real test.
Yeah, I mean, Petrusev's been amazing down low, and then off the bench they've got Drew Timmy, who is a player Arizona really wanted, you know, 4-star, 5-star guy out of the Dallas area. They're tremendous. I think as you said, they are not afraid to play anybody on the road. They went into UW and beat them the other day. I was watching that, and the way they kind of pulled away at the end, I mean, that shows some real strength, because even though that's a smaller arena, arguably when it's going, it's just as tough, probably even tougher than McHale is to play at, because the students there are all on the sidelines and they are riding you the whole game, and I'm sure they were. I mean, you could see it a little bit on the TV, but it's so much more immense when you're there. So for them to come in here, yeah, it's going to be tough for them, but they're going to be like, yeah, this is just another game. Plus, this time of year, it might help them a little bit. They have had the whole week off. Arizona had to play Wednesday night, and Gonzaga played that game on Saturday at UW and went back to Spokane, and they've had time to rest and get ready. So that's going to be to their advantage, too.
They got size. What is their front court, Bruce? You said 6'11", 6'11", and 6'10"?
Well, starting, yeah, I think they go 6'7", at the small four, but they have three really legit players there, 6'10". I don't, you know.
Yeah,
they don't play them all together.
Yeah, Tilly and Drew Timmy are 6'10". Let's see, Petrusev is 6'11". So you got some legit size out there.
They rebound well. They shoot very well from two. They're very efficient inside. They're also a pretty good 3-point shooting team. They pretty much do everything pretty well, and that's why they're number 6. It's not a surprise.
I was just talking to Jay before the podcast, and he pitched the question to me. He was like, what the hell happened to Gonzaga? Are they still the new kids on the block? 20 years ago, nobody really knew about them, and now Mark Few's got them consistently ranked every single year.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're kind of the poster child for why basketball is so much different than football. You do not have to be in a power conference to be a power team, and that's exactly what they've been. And there's been other programs that have kind of emerged as well over the years from you know, other conferences, sort of mid-major conferences, that have played really well. I mean, I think, you know, as I was asking Miller the other day, like, when you bring Gonzaga in here, does it feel like you're bringing Oregon or UCLA? And he said, yeah, and I think that's probably true, and I think fans would probably agree. They're just as marquee a team to bring in as anybody that you could bring in. And, you know, that's a credit to how they built that program up. I think, you know, the only thing that makes them tricky about them sometimes, especially when they get into league play, they rack up all these wins against WCC teams, and you're not really sure how good they are. And it's arguably sometimes they're overseeded in the tournament as a result. But that's changing a little bit, because even the WCC has gotten a little, you know, it's gotten a little better now with St. Mary's and BYU being consistently good, and even some other teams right below them, Pepperdine, Santa Clara, et cetera, they're pretty good. So you're getting they're getting better competition there, which is helping them. But they've always been, you know, a really powerful program.
I know we love to talk about Arizona versus UCLA as, you know, big West Coast basketball rivalry, and that's true historically, but Arizona-Gonzaga, that's as good as any West Coast, quote-unquote, rivalry that we have here.
Especially in more recent years.
More recent years. I mean, every matchup between these two teams are close. Both are, you know, ranked in the top 25 almost every single year they play each other. I mean, I remember a few years ago, 2014, the game that went into overtime here between Arizona and Gonzaga was just phenomenal basketball, right, even though it was low scoring. I mean, we've had some very, very great matchups between these two programs over the last several years.
Well, and it's really picked up since Sean Miller came here. Bruce, I don't remember Arizona consistently playing Gonzaga when Lute Olson was the head coach. And I know they were still relatively newer then, but, I mean, really ever since Sean Miller took over, I mean, they face Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament. They have home-and-home series with Gonzaga. It just seems like at least every other year, Gonzaga seems to find their way on Arizona's schedule.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is it's become, since Lute Olson's late in his career, Gonzaga was still relatively new at that time in the early 2000s, and it wasn't really cool to go play at Gonzaga because it was, you know, now you go to Gonzaga and you lose, even if you're Kentucky or North Carolina, it's like, okay, well, that happens, you know. But back then, it was like, you don't go there and risk losing there. In fact, I remember one time, a long time ago, when they were playing Washington State and staying in Spokane, as they usually do, and the doorman was letting Lute out, and he said, please, can you stay and play Gonzaga? And Lute just kind of smiled at him like, are you kidding? No, we're not going to do that. And now it's a thing. And I think secondarily, I think, you know, Mark Few and Sean Miller have a good relationship. They're friends off the court. They very respect each other a lot. That has a lot to do with it. And I think chartering helps. Arizona can get to Spokane, even though it's a long way away. It's not so bad on a charter plane. They also like the hotel they stay at. They have a classic, beautiful downtown Spokane hotel they stay at for Washington State and Gonzaga games, and everybody's really comfortable with that. So all these things, these little minor things play into it a little bit, but I think the main thing is that they, you know, Sean Miller wants to schedule a good couple of good home-and-home games every year, and, you know, Gonzaga's relatively close, and so it's been them a lot. And then on top of it, they've also had a couple of neutral side opportunities as well. So it just seems like they're playing them almost every year.
Yeah, they'll be going to Spokane next year.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
Be a fun one.
Yeah,
at the kennel.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So this game on Saturday night, top 15 matchup. Who do you got, Arizona or Gonzaga?
You know what? Pick Arizona. Just they're at home. I think, you know, the freshmen especially are going to play much better at home. We don't have to go on the road. They, you know, it's a late game. You know, they're used to playing these late games. Nothing gets out of routine for Arizona. You know, they're going to be comfortable at home. But I think it's going to be close. I think if Arizona can't get it under control on the, you know, offensive boards, I think Gonzaga could pull away, especially late, because they can create a lot of second chance opportunities, which Sean Miller said Arizona doesn't necessarily do as good a job as he wants them to, and that's just kind of who, what this team's identity is at this moment. But I think Arizona, just because, you know, they're at home, I think they'll win by five points.
Okay.
I'll go like 70 to 65.
Okay. I think this is going to be a big game for Nico Mannion.
He shows up in those big games.
Whenever there's a big time moment,
he's Wooden Legacy, the lower back though.
Wooden Legacy Championship, he was dealing with the lower back soreness. He only had, was it 9 points and 7 assists. He was 0-for-3 from 3-point range, 3-11 from the field. So it wasn't a great offensive performance by Nico Mannion, but you look at the 7 assists, getting his teammates involved. He steps up in those big time moments, and this doesn't just start at Arizona. It's been going back all the way to his high school days. I mean, whenever there's a big game, Nico Mannion relishes that moment, and I just think Nico Mannion's going to have one of those Nico Mannion
type
iconic of
games.
Exactly. He's going to have some very key plays down the stretch, whether it's a steal followed by a pass to Josh Green for a dunk, because it seems like those two have a decent connection.
Nightly basis.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Nico Mannion is going to make some plays down the stretch. I will not be surprised if Arizona loses, though. Gonzaga, number six team in the country, and defensive rebounding has been a big problem for Arizona this year. If Gonzaga can get active on the offensive glass, get some putbacks, get some second chance points, I think it could be a long night for Arizona. But it's at McHale Center. You got the home crowd behind you, regardless if it's 8 o'clock tip-off. Fans are going to bring it. Nico Mannion, I think, is going to have a big game. And it's going to be a close one, but I'm going to go with Arizona 72, Gonzaga 69. Bruce?
I'd say probably I'll split the difference there. I think maybe you'll go with the flip of the 2014-15 game where it went to overtime, but maybe Gonzaga wins this time on a rebound, on a putback. I mean, I just think, you know, it could go either way. I mean, who knows? But, you know, Gonzaga probably slightly more experienced with their top players. They're used to playing on the road, you know. So, and they've got a little better resume to date, so maybe you got to tilt it that way. But it could go, obviously, it could go either way.
We kind of picked some low-scoring games just on our scores right now, but Gonzaga and Arizona are both top 15 offenses in the country. So at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if this gets into the, you know,
80s.
Oof. You know, just the way it could fall. You know, if both teams start going on runs offensively, just trade punches back and forth. I think it's just going to be a fun game all the way around.
Absolutely.
Even if Arizona loses this game, it's still, no matter what, it'll be a good learning experience for them how to handle big pressure games like this. And it'll, you know, they'll have many more opportunities like this in Pac-12 play because the conference will be so strong.
Yeah. Get them battle-tested for Pac-12 play.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, win or lose, this is a game that helps them. It helps their strength of schedule. It helps their experience level. You know, you just can't go wrong playing a game like this, you know, unless you lose by, like, 40 or something.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Should be a fun one Saturday night at McHale Center. Tip-off of that game is set for 8 o'clock. Number 6, Gonzaga in Tucson, facing the number 15, Arizona Wildcats. Make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. Tons of Arizona basketball content. P.J. Brown also doing a tremendous job with the Arizona women's basketball coverage. They're still undefeated.
Yep. They play tonight.
Playing some pretty good basketball.
Then they have two more games before they start conference play. And,
yes.
You know, Pac-12 women's basketball is no slouch either. They're probably the best conference in women's college basketball.
No, three teams in the top 10 or something right now. It's absurd. But it's been that way for a while. It's just, and it's always been kind of like, how can Arizona compete? And it's happening. You know, it's really something to see.
Tons of UVA basketball content coming your way on the Wildcaster app. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. It's free. Download it on the App Store and Google Play. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, rate, and review, and share it to all your friends. That will do it for this episode of the Wildcast podcast. Special thanks to Frog and Firkin for hosting us as always. For Bruce, for Alec, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.